Well, welcome to the next episode of Rich Tapestries with Bryce Davies and Nuria Gonsalves. Welcome, Nuria. Always good to see your face and have some time together. We love doing this, don't we?
We truly enjoy. I just look forward to this podcast series sessions, Bryce, with you. And, of course, our guests all the time. Thank you.
Well, we kind of have permission to ask questions to someone like you wouldn't normally have, would you? So you have a proper conversation every time, and it's a lovely kind of way to get to know someone, isn't it? It's really special.
Absolutely, absolutely. So special, and literally, you know, just to getting to know that person, and it's just not knowing, but learning so much about them, right? And I think it's not only for our listeners, but our own selves. I think, you know, I feel that we are really lucky to be doing this and blessed to be doing this.
Sure is. Actually, we saw each other the other week, didn't we, Nuria? I happened to be in Auburn, and we don't know each other that well, but we sort of saw each other. It was a big hug. It was like family, wasn't it? It was so, I think the good bond that happens with you and me because of this too, which is really
absolutely
nice.
Absolutely, Bryce. No, I think we've got to know each other more after this, I feel.
Yeah, that's lovely. Well, tell me about our guest, Nuria.
Sure, Bryce. So I would say firstly, Salam au Khush Amadit, which is hello and welcome in Farsi, because our special guest today is coming from Iran. So I'm actually very honored to introduce someone whose presence feels like a calm breeze, which is peaceful, and that means aram in Farsi, or respectful in which means muhtaram, and mulayam, which means which is gentle. So he is originally from Iran with family still there and faithfully serving at the Farsi Faith Fellowship in Preston Core. Well, when he's not at the heart of ministry, you might find him weaving through water with swimming or exploring the outdoors with bushwalking, perfecting his moves in boxing, or actually nurturing hearts in group prayer time, each activity a reflection of his grounded spirit. And we first connected through a conference in Melbourne. And what I found most compelling was not just his calm countenance, but the story behind it. And there's a particular turning point at a moment where he fell in love with Christ. And if I have to say that in Farsi, it is Ashek Shodan B. Masi. So that actually reshaped his destiny. And let's not forget his passion for food. He loves Persian kebabs, which are kobide, or bulgogi, and jeyuk bokyum, which is Korean pork. And of course, not forgetting the fragrant gourmet sabzi, which is a delicious tapestry that mirrors his rich cross-cultural journey. So once again, Khush Amadid, and a very welcome to our guest, Kevin Amiri. Kevin, your calm presence, gentle heart, and the story of how faith found you. We can't wait to explore it all. So I would once again say welcome, Khush Amadid.
Thank you, Nuria. And thank you, Bryce. I'm very pleased to be here with you.
Excellent. Thank you. I must say, Motesha Keram. Motesha Keram is thank you in Farsi. Yeah.
Yes, Motesha Keram.
Now, I was with a Syrian family, which is not Iran, I know, but it's in that part of the world. And they fed me a feed called magluba. You know what magluba is?
Magluba?
Yeah?
No, I don't know.
Well, if you want to know more about sort of Syrian.
We have a long history. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So tell me a bit about your childhood, Kevin. Where were you born, and what were your mum and dad up to when you were a child?
Born in Tehran, Iran. And I born before the revolution of 1979, yes. I just born a few months before the revolution, what happened in Iran. And then I grew up in the Islamic Republic of Iran. And everything changed through that time. It was in Iran time is now is before revolution and after revolution. It was not easy to grow up in a war time, but yet, you know, there was good memories and good times and with family and with friends and I cannot tell it's everything. Everything was hardship, but it was good times and bad times.
Yeah. Like Tehran is a big city, isn't it? So like a bustling city, that's the environment you grew up in?
Yes, Tehran is a very big city. At the moment, there is 11 million people living there. Yeah, it's quite big and quite busy.
What did your parents do for a living? What did they do to earn money?
My father worked in a cigarette making factory. He was one of the mechanic group. And he worked all his life there, and he retired from that company called Dohaniyat, Iran Dohaniyat. And then my mom, she was kind of a housewife, and also she had a shop. We had a shop front house. And I remember growing up, mom always busy doing both, making food for us and taking care of us. And then customer would call, would go for taking care of customers.
What did you sell at the shop?
First we had a few times they changed the business. First there was some sort of clothing, and then started to sell blankets and pillows and your bedding stuff.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I do. I do have one brother, which is a year younger than me. And I have five sisters, beautiful sisters.
Wow, and they're younger than you too, are they?
Three older than me and two younger than me.
Mm. Wow. That's a big family.
Yeah. Very, very big family. So Kevin, just on that note, so as one of many siblings, you know, and considering it's a big family, your parents would be very busy. How did your childhood shape who you became?
Well, on a busy family with lots of competition in everything. And lots of fun, lots of fighting, lots of laughing. And I just, I was in the middle. So I had three older sister and two younger sister. But being son in a family, it gives you some sort of, you know, responsibility, like feel like you need to be strong. You need to take care of others. So I was, even though I was younger, but I felt like I need to protect my sisters and even older sisters.
So it sounds like from a young age, you have to be, have some quite adult qualities. You have to be careful.
Yes,
It demands early maturity, I would say, right? Like when you're in such a big family and as you said, being a male. You had the responsibility. So it sounds like you had to find your place, your identity within a very few full household.
That's right. That's right. And there was a beautiful time.
It sounds like a loving and fun and quite normal sort of, well, normal. I don't know what normal is in Iran, but what a sort of a happy family, even though there was trouble. I mean, from an Australian point of view, we hear about the Ayatollah Khomeini. Is that how you say that? The leader that took over in the revolution. And we kind of think, oh my goodness, it's a dangerous place and there's chaos and there's instability. Yeah. Was it like that for you?
Oh, yeah. Well, look, we grew up seeing lots of hostility and cruelty. Because in the beginning of this revolution, they were very hard and tough on people and everyone against them. So Muslim and Islamic Sharia rules has been implanting in the society very harshly by force. And there was special forces on the streets just make sure people cover their hair or they don't have short clothing. Or for even young boys like me, we couldn't have short sleeve t-shirts, if you believe me or not. I have once cornered from one of these police, with Sharia police, I don't know what exactly called them, Islamic police, and says, hey, you have a t-shirt which is not Islamic. I said, oh, what's wrong with it? It's just you have to have long sleeve one. These things happened, and for women a lot more harder. It was very tough. Democratic free country, from the free world, they just pulled us back to the Stone Age, back into very hard.
So did you have an Islamic faith when you were, like, was your family Islamic in their faith then, or were you?
Look, when you're born in a Muslim family, it is like it's your identity. It's who you are. You don't think you're not. You're just born into it. The first thing when you're born, they recite the Shahada in baby's ear. The father does. And that's how you become a Muslim. And you don't have a choice. And you think, this is it. This is who I am. I am a Muslim. And then in that society, there was lots of censorship. There was no internet at the time. You learn from school, from family, everywhere, about Islamic rules and teachings of Muhammad and Islam, and kind of you grow up with it, and you don't think otherwise.
It sounds like, though, there was a season where to be Muslim was safe and reasonable, and that's just who you were. And then there was another season where it felt very restricted and very primitive almost, and like the Muslim faith, I don't think it changed in its tenets, but the outworking of that through the government and through the leadership of your country changed significantly. Is that right?
That's true. Islam, it changes if the depends if it's in a free country, they more talk about the good stuff of Islam. But if you live in a country that the leadership and the government is Islamic, and they impose by force. But if they don't have that force, they just try to, you know, suggest that's best for you to do that.
Tell me a bit about your schooling, and did you, like, when did you leave Iran and come to Australia? How old were you?
How old I was when I came to Australia? I came about 13 years ago, and I am 47 now, so that makes me 33.
So you're 34. A grown man when you left Iran.
Yes.
So, Kevin, before coming to Australia, would you like to share something about your schooling, and then in between those, you know, years, did you live all your life till 33 in Iran, or did you go somewhere else?
When I kind of gave up on high school and I went to the army for 2 years, which is mandatory, it's about 21 months. After finishing that, I decided to move out of Iran. I just see the world and experience the free world, and I watched the world from the movies and just wanted to see how the other people live. And, you know, I just decided, first I was going to come to Australia. It was year 2000. there was like at the time there was the games was happening in Sydney, I remember. What is that, Olympic Games or World Cup Games, something?
Olympic Games, yeah.
Yeah, but it didn't happen. I couldn't come to Australia with visa problems. But instead, I went to South Korea. I stayed there for about 5 years, less than 5 years.
Okay. And so while you were in South Korea, you traveled to seek some opportunities there, I believe.
Well, South Korea was very different to where I grew up. So the language, the food, people. First, I thought they all look alike, and I couldn't see who is who, because, you know, our country, it's not like multicultural like Australia. You see people from everywhere. I just grew up seeing the people look like me. But yeah, the first thing was like, these people all look alike. And I remember I got a job in a cabinet making factory, and then I was just trying to see who was the boss, which one was the boss I met first. I was like, the boss was Sajanim in Korean. So I would go to some person, hey, Sajanim, excuse me, I need this. I said, I'm not your Sajanim, I'm just working here. I said, that's one thing. And then food was very spicy. And that's seafood. We don't eat lots of seafood in Iran, and not spicy at all. That was first thing, was all these differences. But I was very young. I was like trying to adapt. I was just 22, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they have some similarities, like cultural ways, like the family respecting and to all elders. And yeah, we have some differences and similarities with South Koreans.
Yeah. Was it difficult to get out of Iran and go to South Korea? Like, did you have to escape, or did you just get there or something?
I know. I need to spend some money, because with Iranian passport, you can't go so far. It's not like you just go to the gate and just stamp in, go in. You need to get the visa. You need to have a strong reason to get the visa. So there are some people like help you with that, like set you a company, like something that you're actually going for business, but and stay for like a short time. But I decide in my mind was to stay longer.
Did you have a trade or a profession at that stage? I'm taking gone to university or studied or got some sort of degree?
No, I didn't go to university, but I was working before I go to South Korea, you say, yeah? Mm. Yeah, I was working with my father's yurt and just working with some people who used to make doors and windows, and just take their stuff and take to the places they wanted to install. That was my first job. Yeah. And then I used to do sport as a professional kickboxer and the boxing. It was my hobby, and I loved the most when I was a teenager. Oh. And I was good at it, actually. I got gold medal in Tehran State.
Wow.
And,
yeah.
I became like number four.
I remember
Iran.
Never to upset you and threaten you in any way. Right? We're going to
No, I'm very gentle.
I'm sure you are.
Very calm.
That's right. So I guess coming to South Korea, a sort of a semi-Western sort of country, did your philosophy of life start to change? Like, when did you start to consider Christian faith as opposed to your Islamic tradition?
Yes. Look, as I said, grew up in Iran, thinking and knowing that I am Muslim, although I wasn't really practicing, like, you know, the things like going to Friday prayers and fastings and every day five-time prayers, all that, I didn't do that. I wasn't religious, but I was born into it. Yes. But I believed what they taught me from the childhood, like God is Allah and the prophet is the last prophet and sealed out of prophets, and the Quran is the perfect preserved book from God. And I believe that Bible was corrupted, and that's why God sent Muhammad and Islam to, you know, fix the problem. And the people who got wrong idea about God, and that was my belief, and I really believed that. I thought, oh, Christians, they believe in a corrupted book, and they don't know who really God is. That was my mind, in my idea. Wow. Yeah, and then I went, when I went to Korea, and I started working first factory, and then I lost the job for because of someone else's mistake, and then we went there together, but we had to get out together because there was a house in, or there was a kind of a small backyard container that they gave us to live. But because I lost the job, then we had to move out, and then I became homeless. And I had some money, but it's all finished. We couldn't keep living in motels and buying food. And I went to one of the friend's house and stayed there for a week. And I was looking for a job, but it was very hard to find a job with my level of Korean and not really experienced. And it was a difficult time for Koreans as well. The businesses were suffering as well. So my friend told me, hey, there is a church nearby, and I heard the pastor is a very good person. Just go there and ask him to help you. My first reaction was, they are Christians and we are Muslims. Why they would help me? In my mind, Muslims help Muslims and Christians just help Christians, you know, just separate community. We are not meant to help each other. But he said, no, just trust me, just go, and you don't have anything to lose. And I said, oh, okay, yeah, why not? I just go there. I went there, I met this pastor. His name was Mr. Kim. And I just, with my broken English, and I didn't know Korean much, and I said, excuse me, I don't have a job, I don't have money, I need work, very simple words. And he kind of understood me. His English was much better than me. Okay, and he said, all right, come here. And he took me to that, behind the church. It was a big room, and said, you can stay here and turn on the heater. It was cold winter. Gave me some blankets and pillow and a box of ramen noodles, and he said, you can stay here and I try to find a job for you. And I was amazed, like, oh, I first met him, I just took me there, gave me a place to stay, food and everything. I'm like, then I'm gonna find you a job on top. Wow, this guy is very kind. I didn't expect that, to be honest. I was shocked. And he asked me, do you think there are people like you on the street? And I said, oh, yeah, a lot. Because now is like what they call in Korea IMF. It was a difficult timing for business. And then all the market was down. And I said, yes, there are many. And he had a very old van, and he got in his van and went to turn in a circle in the city and go everywhere. And every time he would come back with a van full of people from Russia, from Africa, from everywhere, like colorful people. And just they will come more and more and more. And in the end, in a very big room, I hardly had a place to lie down. He helped many people. He brought many people there and gave them a shelter and food. Yeah, and he said, I'm going to have a Sunday service. Would you like to come? And I said, sure. Because, you know, it was just the room, church room, was just in the corner. And he was kind to us, and we had to respect him. It was grew up to respect who is kind to you. That was like my family values as well. I'm sure many are like that. We just, anyone help us, we should show respect and be thankful. And first time over there, he started to talk about Jesus and Bible. And he was saying Jesus is Son of God. And Jesus is God, born in the flesh, came as a human. For me, this teaching was absurd. What, this guy is a very kind person. The other Christians who sent the blankets and food, like I would see like people sending help, other Christians. Mm-hmm. And I would say, wow, these Christians are different to what I thought they are. They're kind people. To the secular world, these people all take care of themselves, but these people, they don't really care that we are Muslims or from different country. They just generously help. So that kind of opened me to trust them, to say they are good people, actually.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So sometimes the most unexpected encounters are the ones that change everything, don't they, Kevin? And I think that was Pastor Kim, I would say, in your case.
So it seems obvious that kindness won you over, and not so much the systematic theology that convinced you, but the kindness sort of seemed to just really... Yeah. And I'm assuming you went to Australia reasonably soon after that and somehow got tangled up with the Salvation Army. Tell me that story.
Yes. So I become Christian in South Korea, as a way to make it short, because then I started to read the Bible myself, and I started to meet other Christians. So they helped me from some friends from America, actually, some people from a church from Texas. They helped me more to understand Jesus, and I gave my heart to Christ there in 2004. And then, and then went back Iran, and then end of 2012, I came Australia. Because I had to run away. I had some problems with government. They didn't like me to be Christian and talk about Jesus. So that's how I had to run away. Some people, I have to get out of country. Any suggestion? Somebody said, you can go Australia, it's safe, and it's not like neighboring country. They might deport you back and you get in hand of this government. But you go Australia, you're safe. And I said, okay. I came went to Indonesia, and at some point somebody just arranged everything. Just went to Indonesia, and from Indonesia I came to Christmas Island, and I was in Christmas Island for about 3 weeks, and then went curtain detention for another 2 months, and then I released to Melbourne.
So you came as a refugee, is that right?
That's right, yeah. I came as an asylum seeker, actually. Asylum seeker is a bit different. Like asylum seeker, you don't have status.
Yeah. So when you got to Melbourne, where did you stay and what happened?
When I came to Melbourne, first thing was looking for a church because I needed a community to support me. I needed to go worship. I needed Jesus. So first thing I was asking, where can I find a church, a good church? There was a pastor in Curtin, Immigration Detention Center, and he was trying to find someone called Dr. Bernie Power. So he tried to contact him, but he was overseas, couldn't find him. So he just introduced another Iranian church in Box Hill called New Hope. And I went there and started attending the church over there, and then slowly and gradually try to find my way. And didn't have work right at the time, so we had some small you know, payments from government. We had to live on.
Mm. How did you find the Salvation Army? What's that story?
We did Salvation Army stories. Very interesting. When I came to Australia, our caseworker gave me an address to go and receive some vouchers and some help from Salvation Army. And that was my first time knowing Salvation Army. So I went there and they gave me some voucher. It was in Melbourne, Sydney Road, and in Brunswick, in Tuning Street.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So I went there and just they helped me with vouchers, and there was someone there, officer, Major Colin Elkington, and he could speak some Farsi language, welcoming me, hello, how let hube chetori, with Aussie accent, you know, but very funny. I felt very good.
Did you feel that the fact that an officer there could speak your language, did that really warm you?
It was good. Involved? Yeah. Yeah. Well, it felt like connection there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. When you hear your mother tongue. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
And so you started to attend the Salvation Army, like you're now an officer in the Salvation Army. So obviously you got on board.
I just got the help and left. But a year after, I moved to Brunswick from Footscray. So I became like very close, like neighboring with the Tinning Street Asylum Seeker Support Service there. And I didn't have work right for 3 years. Immigration didn't give us work right. So I needed to fill up my time. I need to be active, be positive, and be part of community. Just staying home just drive me crazy. I went to Salvation Army, the same place, and asked them, I would like to volunteer. Is there anything I can do? And they said, what you can do? And they said, I can do painting. I have some experience in teaching language. And I said, wonderful, we need both. We're painting this building next week. Can you help us? I said, of course. And then later, a few months later, there was an English teacher. She was leaving, so they wanted me to replace her. So I was teaching to asylum seekers for a while. And then Major Colin started a Farsi Faith Fellowship. And he needed someone to help with translating and interpreting the service. Mm-hmm. And I started to help him on Sundays. And some other times, he would go in people's houses and teach them about Christianity. So because they didn't know English, so I was his translator. So I would go with him to asylum seekers' houses and the Iranian people, and he will tell them about Christ. And we have a course called Christianity Explained. And we just teach them about Jesus, and I was translating. I learned more alongside, and just got involved from there.
Wow. So that's amazing, right? And looking back, Kevin, how do you understand your journey now from Iran to Korea to Australia as part of something bigger?
I see God's fingerprint everywhere. I'll see that He had a purpose and plan for me, and I needed to grow up. He needed to build my character and my knowledge and who I am through this journey, through hardship, different people, different cultures, and becoming an asylum seeker, becoming a refugee. All of that, I think that helped me to understand more, to have desire to help people, and kind of not judging people by their status or their education or their language or culture. Just I kind of grew up multicultural, different faiths and different people, and from the lower level to higher level, like it came. The people I meet every day, I am actually them, like I was in their position. So I understand them. And someone been talk, someone when we talk about Jesus, someone don't like it. I understand it. I didn't like it first time. So that helped me a lot to in my ministry to more calm and understanding people.
Yeah.
I can imagine incredible respect for the power of kindness.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes,
and the genuine kindness which was shown to you. And I think you're reflecting the same now. And having that empathy as well, Kevin, as you just mentioned, you know, because when you put yourself in their shoes, that's when you actually really understand. So it sounds like it, you know, it really sounds like a path that was being shaped for you even when you didn't see it. Mm. Yeah.
That's right.
So what are you up to now, Kevin? What's your role?
I am a ministry assistant, actually, at Preston Core with Farsi Faith Fellowship. And I help with Major Colin Elkington, the first person I met in Salvation Army. And now we are working together in the same office. And I'm working and helping with mostly people who are Iranian, but we do sometimes help and work with from the Christianity perspective to other people come to faith. So Pakistan, from people who born here, but mostly from Muslim background, because I know more about Islam and I can help them to understand and to see the differences.
Wow. I forgot to ask you, are you married and do you have children? What's your family situation?
No, I'm single, actually. I did engage in Iran. In 2009, I did engage with a Muslim girl in Iran, but it didn't work out. They said, no, we cannot give our daughter to a Christian man. We didn't know you're a Christian. And I said, I kind of told you, but you didn't believe me. They thought I'm joking. But then found out, I said, no. So they canceled.
One of the questions we asked towards the end of our interviews is, what would you say to your 15-year-old self if you could speak into that young man's life with what you know today?
I would say, take it easy and just enjoy your life, enjoy your journey, and do your best. That's whatever ability you have. Mm. And I was doing kickboxing at the time, and I said, okay, this is not going to be your career and your life. God has a bigger plan for you.
Wow. Just
lay back and do the best you're doing, but don't worry. And from the defeats and like all the hardship, and God has a plan for you, better plan, higher plans you don't even imagine now.
Yeah.
Awesome. I love that. It's like speaking to the fighter in you, Kevin. You know, you have come out so strong. And on that note, I would also want to ask, what do you hope listeners take away from your story? And let me say that in Farsi to our Farsi listeners, and forgive me if I am wrong, but it is Omidvari Shena Vandegon as Dostane Shoma Chey Chizi Bardosh Konand.
Perfect.
Thanks, Kevin. What would you like to share?
I would say, look at my background and where I come from. And I didn't know anything about Christianity, but Jesus took me and changed everything, and you know, kind of made my life to build me to who I am now, for His kingdom, so I can bring people to faith. I would say, and wherever you are or wherever background you come from, just trust in God and know that we are not actually the one doing things, that he is, but he using us. In just the Philippians 4:13 says, I can do all things through him who give me strength. Just trust him. I don't think I don't have university degree, don't have good English, don't know theology, I am not Australian. Don't worry. God will take care of it.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. That's powerful.
Now, I would hope that every listener, especially people from the cold communities, really hear what you're saying there, because I think some may think they are too far behind the eight ball to make a contribution, and that's actually not true at all. God uses us all in a unique way. So that's a wonderful message. Thank you so much. It's been fabulous to chat with you. I've really enjoyed getting to know you. And next time I'm around in Melbourne, hopefully we'll bump into each other and say hello.
Likewise. Yeah. I look forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Kevin, for sharing your incredible story of courage, transformation, and faith. And your journey does remind us that even in the darkest moments, there is light, there is purpose, and there is always a path forward. So to all our listeners today, may this story encourage you to reflect on your own journey and perhaps carry a little more hope into the world around you. Until next time, stay strong, stay curious, and stay connected. And in Farsi, I would like to say, Moshe Kiram, which is thank you, and Bedrood. Is that correct, Kevin? Bedrood,
yes, yes.
Bye-bye for now.
Yes.
Thank you. And
thank you. God bless.